After all this, you still...
I still want that gas, yes. And you had better deliver.
So, anyways, folks.
Okay.
Welcome back to Gaslighting. We're in a bit of a unique situation here for this segment of old movie magic. Friend of the show, John, has also invited us to Twitch stream. So at the time of recording this episode, this was all live. This was off the cuff, just raw dogged.
Just raw dogged, no protection.
I apologize for any, you know, like, cyber demons whispering into the audio.
It is me.
Guy. Oh, no.
She was a bot this entire time, bro.
I knew it, bro. I knew it.
Like Donald Glover in the Han Solo movie, that's me, bro.
Yeah.
All right, so Sky, I need you to solve a CAPTCHA for me, because I need to make sure you're a human.
Oh, see.
Yeah, don't, I can't.
Right, exactly, bro.
I don't know what a car is.
Like a stop sign to you, or?
The stop signs are the ones that have the colors, right?
Multiple colors. Just so many colors. It's crazy.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I failed.
I think you did. Yeah.
Did you guys ever see that one video of like it was Among Us, but like instead of the different puzzles you have to do, it was like CAPTCHAs.
Oh, dude! I am embarrassingly bad at CAPTCHAs. I'm not gonna lie. To the point where I will literally get someone to do them for me. Like I'm not joking. Like, I straight up will do that.
You know, there's a lot of discussion about like what's ableist and what isn't. And I think like, you know what? I'll just say it. CAPTCHAs are ableist. Low key.
CAPTCHAs are ableist.
I refresh them so many times if I like, because I don't want to get locked out of the whatever I'm doing. So I'll refresh until I know that that's what it is. I'm like, nah. Give me another one. I don't trust myself.
It's like the stakes are so high. You know, like,
they are.
Access this CAPTCHA or your card is declined. Like, oh fuck, okay, wait, is this, what is a square? I don't know.
Oh my god. Alright, so, back to what we were gonna talk about. I completely forgot about the plot of this movie until today. And it was actually good.
Oh, it was great, I loved it.
Jordan Peele's Nope. That was actually dope.
How long did you plan that?
That I stole someone else's tweet.
Oh, okay.
I did not plan that at all.
I was imagining Adi in his bathroom, staring in the mirror, practicing that.
Probably
just butt-ass naked, trying to like plan riffs for the podcast.
Of course.
Jordan Peele's Nope. More like yeah.
Wait, no. Dope sounds better.
Just checking Urban Dictionary.
Yep. Got a thesaurus and Urban Dictionary next to the mirror.
Right. So the thing is like we're kind of like 2 weeks out from when we saw it like what, 2 weeks ago or something like that?
Whenever it came out.
We saw it right on release date.
The release date pretty much. That was such a good movie, and then I saw the new Thor recently.
That was your mistake. I told you. You knew. I mean, it was bad too.
But like, that's not fair, right? Like, okay,
it's not fair, absolutely. But like,
I will come out and I will take the aggression for this. But I am an MCU head. I would like to identify as that. Okay, let me just say that. So, did I love Thor? It was a fun movie. You know, it was just it was for shiggles. You know, it's not like anybody was like
say when they.
Scott, let me rationalize.
Tell me about that movie, right? It's like, it
was cute.
It would be the best. Here's the thing. I feel like the Marvel movies peaked in like 2016.
Oh, they did.
And this movie belongs in 2016. Like, it feels like 2016 trying to replay itself.
Say, no, it's 2018 when Endgame came.
Something like that.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Was the first one Infinity whatever?
It just I mean,
where everybody died. I mean, that was the
point. Hey, spoilers, man! What are you doing?
Oh, I'm sorry. we're also gonna say a lot of spoilers. So like,
if you haven't seen
Nope, don't watch my stream. Please click away. Come back later.
Yeah, say Nope to this stream if you want.
Say Nope.
Or watch it and then go see Nope because it is also good. And
yeah, we'll it's probably still a great movie.
A lot of if the information.
If you're the kind of person like me where you're scared of horror movies. And you read the plot of it to make sure you can stomach it. it's permissible to listen.
Absolutely.
There's just a few jump scares, but most scary honestly, movies honestly, have.
I'm gonna be real with you. That wasn't a horror movie.
It was way more thriller.
You know yeah, I mean? Yeah, yeah. It was way thriller, more thriller,
sci-fi.
Very gory for sure, but not like full on horror.
Yeah, which yeah. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, this movie comes in as the third installment of. Well, it's not really part of any combined project, but it is Jordan Peele's third cinematic release.
Mm-hmm.
We saw him post Key and Peele. Start with Get Out, Us, and now we're at Nope. So, John, I think you've seen all three. I've only seen Get Out and Nope. So,
I've only seen Nope.
Yeah, you've only seen Nope.
Oh, you guys are tripping.
She hasn't seen.
Scary movies.
And I mean, you know, Get Out is one of the most frightening movies because it features most frightening creatures known to man.
White women. I know the premise of Get Out and everything, and I basically have seen the movie from all the stuff I've seen on social media and all the commentary.
You're telling me, I played the video game when you really just watched someone else play it.
Exactly. No, I watched your stream, therefore I play the video game. God. I was a part of the experience.
I know, dude. I'm actually very surprised you haven't seen Us.
Yeah, I just what year did that come out? 2018 or like
I don't know. There's
look at the timeline, right? Wait,
this is not.
Listen, I'm like when it comes to movies, I'm like a deadbeat dad. I got 1,000 excuses.
That's fair. Nope was 2019.
Okay, I guess I was just living alone and I was probably just like I didn't want to see a horror movie and come back to an empty apartment. That's probably my rationale.
That'll do it.
Makes sense.
But Get Out, I watch on the plane. So
what?
That's like the worst.
I would rather you tell me Sky's excuse.
Wait, no. Didn't you watch it literally on the plane on the way back to America?
No, I watched it on the way to India.
Oh, okay. That's
next to me.
Wow. She should have woke up and been like, these white women are dangerous.
We might cut that in the release segment.
No, we shouldn't.
We might not. I don't. John, you're coming through muted. Oh my god.
What's up?
There he is. There he
my
is.
Bad. I was talking to chat. Didn't want to interrupt the podcast.
Gotcha. So yeah, like let's start maybe with Get Out and Us first, which
yes.
Get Out, I think, was a good foray into cinema for Jordan Peele. And the one thing that I observed, I don't know if everyone shares this observation, is that it kind of went to show just how much of the production style of the Key and Peele skits were attributable to Jordan Peele's writing. Because Get Out plays a lot like a Key and Peele sketch, except there isn't that moment where they keep fucking up, or the villain just is clumsy, or Keegan-Michael Key comes in to interrupt the shit. Like, it keeps playing those scary scenarios. So that made me realize he's always had a penchant and ability to notice scary situations. And it had a very prescient bit of social commentary at the time, and it's a kind of approach to films that I don't think has been replicated recently, where I think a lot of people have this tendency to try to do a ripped from the headlines style of film, trying to pay an homage to Get Out, but it doesn't pay out the same way. Kind of like what's that one horror movie that is coming out, Karen?
Well, that already came out.
There's a horror movie out called Karen.
Yes. No, it is. And it's literally about a white lady who torments people, and it's like a bootleg Get Out. It's bad. It's really bad. Like, if you watch the trailer is horrible. You're why did you make this?
I'm looking at the review scores right now, and it's like It's so bad. Negative. Like, how do you get a 17% on Rotten Tomatoes? You have to try to get that low.
17? You have to not try at all.
Generous compared to, like, critics. You know what
right.
I mean?
Rotten Tomatoes gives you a 17. Like, you guys just walk on set and was like, let's do something. I don't know.
I didn't know you could go that low. I knew there were percentages. Not watching that one.
And I think that's the other thing, too, is, like, people have this idea where it's, like, if you make a film about social commentary, that's what's going to make it popular. When I think it's, you know, the commentary should, A, be good, and, B, the film has to hold up.
Yeah, because I think like, what you said, what kind of said it perfectly, what you film has to also hold up. I think that one of the reasons why Jordan Peele's movies are so good is, honestly, just the titles alone. Like, and obviously not just the titles alone, but the title just, like, it's like an indicator. Yeah, it's vague, and it captures a feeling, you know? Like, when we were all watching Get Out, there's some point in the movie where you were shouting Get Out. You know, like, it perfectly captures how you're feeling, and it kind of surrounds you with that sense of dread, that sense of it, while also adding on a layer of social commentary. So, like, you know, obviously Get Out was about systemic racism and about how black communities are marginalized and exploited, while white communities are profiting from that exploitation. So when you have movies like that, and it seems like the message... Essentially, the wokeness doesn't equal good at the end of the day, and you can have a great message, but your movie still be dog shit. Because if the message is too on the nose, or if you're just not as good as a writer, like, it's not like these movies are taking off because they're woke, right? The movies are taking off because they're good, and they're woke. You know, it's like it's a secondary thing. So that's what you said was perfect on that one.
And then maybe fill us both in on Us, because. From what I understand, it's a bit of a departure from the Get Out formula, where it's still his take on horror, but it's not as laden with the social critique, and it's more focused on being a horror film first.
Okay, so when it comes to Us, I do strongly disagree that the social commentary is laid back or not as prominent. I would argue it's almost even more prominent than Nope. I think the problem is that a lot of people just didn't get the message, if that makes sense. So, do you want me to, like, run through the plot, or just, like, what do you want me to talk about? Because I love all three of these movies.
As brief as you can.
As brief as I can. I'll say quick plot, and I'll say what my interpretation was, I guess. Roughly. I'll say very roughly. Quick plot. Family, there's, you know, a normal America country stuff. But underneath the country, there's a secret society of these people that actually run the country, sort of, kind of, and they do all this stuff. And eventually, there's a family that goes to a beach, and one of the daughters gets switched out. And no one actually knows this. And so the people underground, they're, like, tortured, and they're, like, you know, mutilated, and they speak with, you know, because, like, their throats are all fucked up.
Images of Us, basically.
Yeah, no, literally. They're the exact same, but flipped, right? And the whole movie essentially just followed that premise. What happens if they rise up and start invading, and, you know, all that stuff. And it seems like just a normal horror movie with no big social critiques. But there is a big critique. And the critique is literally how we treat people who run this country. It's how we treat the more marginalized communities, the workers, the people that actually, like, help society are the ones that are more being stepped on, and they literally live underneath the upper richer class, the higher echelon, which would be like and the reason why I feel like the reason why that point was so hard, that it was so missed, was because if you look at Get Out, it's told from the black point of view. It's told from, you know, someone who is undergoing systemic racism, you know. That's kind of the point of view it's told. But Us, on the flip side, is kind of told from the family that lives on the, like, it lives above ground, right? So it's told from the point of view as people who benefit from the labor of the people underground, but don't necessarily know it, or do know it, don't really want to talk about it because it's weird, or whatever, whatever. So I feel like a lot of people might have missed that point, but there was, the social commentary in there was very strong, and it was very, It was 100% about, like, the class-based struggle. That's literally what the movie was about. entirely, which is why I'm so mad that you haven't watched it, Adi.
That gives me double props to want to watch it, because I also haven't seen Parasite, which I think came out around the same time and also has similar themes, right? So like, I might just do a double feature one of these nights.
You should.
So now let's get to the film that all three of us have seen, Nope. And to start this off, let's just kick off with what was our gut reactions to the film when we saw it? And then after you let it sit and marinate for a sec, what are you thinking about it now? So we'll start with Sky first.
Yeah.
I mean, my gut reaction that it was good. I think it was so different because there wasn't like society trying to get you. Like, it is a supernatural force, and it's not trying to get you like in a strategic way. It's just trying to, you know, eat and be. And like, that's exactly what we're trying to do, is eat and be. But I don't know what my end understanding of the movie is, because I've read so much commentary, including someone saying that Jean Jacket wasn't an alien, mm-hmm. that it was just like a something of Earth that we have not seen before. Mm-hmm. So like, Jean that Jacket, concept right. is the beast.
The alien.
Yeah.
The alien's name is Jean Jacket.
They named it Jean Jacket, yeah. That's after the first horse that Keke Palmer's character was given and then taken back by her daddy. But I love the idea of just like discussing, there is so much I guess like family relationship that we don't see in movies. Like, mostly it's about like a man and a woman, or like some people who are in a relationship, like a romantic relationship or a sexual relationship. And this was about siblings who were trying to figure out life after their dad died, and also learning their different relationships with their father, but without being told like, oh, she has daddy issues, oh, he's shy. Like, it was so subtle because it was just showing you how the characters are and not trying to scream like, this is the premise of what this character is. So it gave it a more natural feel. And I think the ending was like, I really appreciate it, because it didn't give you a full, like, everything's okay now kind of feeling. Like, there is more to be known, but not that we're going to know it. There's more to continue with the story. So I think that's cool. It's dope.
How about you?
Oh, man. Okay, so... first impressions, I'm not going to lie to you. Sky, that was a really smart answer, by the way. Sky's smarter than I am, because my first impression was just straight up confusion. I was just very confused. So it did take me a lot of time to sit back and to really think about what I just watched, because I was just confused. Like, I didn't understand immediately the themes and motifs of the monkey. I was like, what the fuck? Why is he in the story? I didn't understand kind of the, like, the why give, I forget his name, the Asian guy with the, what is his name? It's the only Asian guy in the movie. Whatever, him, the guy.
Jupiter.
Yeah, the guy who. Why he had such a tragic backstory, what the point was showing the monkey, a lot of it was just, like, very confusing to me. It took me a minute to actually sit back and to actually really think about the film. and really to draw up my own like ideas of like what I think the film was about, which was really cool because I don't do that very often. I'm gonna be honest with you. Like I said, a lot of the movies I watch are like MCU, where I don't have to think. So I'm not gonna hide it. Okay, I don't. But this movie actually did have to think, which is pretty cool. Some of the themes I thought that were really awesome, just blatant exploitation. I know this is gonna sound pandemic. I'm sorry, but exploitation for the sake of profit, right? Like. That's kind of like was the primary motivator for the entire movie, which I thought was interesting. Whether it was the horses being exploited when Dan Kluwer's character was selling it to the Jupiter amusement park, and the Jupiter amusement park guy straight up knew he wasn't gonna, like, he was literally killing the horses, he wasn't gonna sell them back to him.
There's literally a scene where he's like, hey, can I eventually buy my horse back? And he looks him in the eye, like, yeah, I'll let you buy the horse back, only to like never.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason why that exploitation happened was because he was trying to exploit the alien, right? And to get the alien to show up and get profit from that. Like, the whole movie was entirely driven by just exploitation of, like, natural resources, animals, just things out there in nature. And people, just for money. And that's why, like, when I thought about that, that's when it really clicked in my head. That's why the monkey was in the movie, right? Because the monkey was on a TV show being exploited. They were trying to tame the untamable, and a balloon popped and people died, all for the sake of entertainment, for the sake of profit, for the sake of, you know, whatever you want to spend your money on. And that's why I think that's the only reason why I think the monkey was in the movie. And and I think that's a really good, like, I think that's a really awesome, I hope I'm right, I hope, like, Jordan Peele's one day is gonna watch this, like, oh damn, that guy was spitting. But that's what I think the movie was essentially about. It was just the cycle of exploitation, the cycle of just abuse that happens for the name of profit.
That's I was also thinking about the exploitation of him as a child. So, like, the idea of him being a child star, how that might have been the reason why him and the monkey connected, or the chimp connected at the end of, like, right before he died, because they were both in the same type of situation. Like, they didn't ask to be here, they didn't choose to. He was in a TV show beforehand, and then got another TV show, because that's what you do when you're a child star. It's just you continue to work because that's what you need to do. But they both had that little, like, a moment of, like, we are both being exploited. And I think that's why the chimp didn't try to attack Jupiter, because they felt the similar pain of being exploited by this bigger thing just for money, and not being able to even make one mistake. Like, you can see how when they're, like, doing the scene before it all happens, like, Jupiter does make a little mistake, and, like, they look at him very, like, it looks like why can't you not just do it? Like, you're better than this, stop wasting our time. And I feel like that's also what the chimp was going through, like, probably was dealing with a lot of abuse off screen, and that is what cause or tribute to the snap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're definitely, like, hitting that point where, like, we don't have to separate out the plot summary with the discussion of the themes. And I think that's kind of my final take on Jordan Peele's style of cinema, where there's no deeper subtext. Everything he's saying is actually very upfront and very clear. And whether it was Get Out with its themes of exploitation and appropriation, whether it was Us and its, you know, themes of impersonation and, you know, like, things being overturned, I think Nope is actually very clear in what themes it's trying to convey. This is the part where that, like, Sky and I missed, because, like, we were, like, a bit late into getting into the movie theater. But I think the intro to the movie sums up what it was trying to say best. So, John, I think you recall this. How did they present it? Because I think it started with a Bible verse, the specific
it started from Nahum. It started with the I actually don't know
just to read it, because like I think like it sets it clearly is, and I will cast abominable filth upon thee, make thee vile, and will set thee as a spectacle, which actually trickles through every aspect of the movie. Like the movie in its entirety is about the spectacle in a way.
Yeah, because that's what they're trying to do, right? The whole point was to try to capture the ghost, or the ghost, wow. The whole point was to try to capture the alien on film, just to, you know, try to get the Oprah shot. The whole thing was about the spectacle, which really makes that, like, I didn't actually really think about that Bible verse until, like, now, like, you know, before I was thinking about it during the movie, but now, like, after, like, really thinking about the movie, that Bible verse really, like, says a lot, right? Because it's, the whole point of it is, like, being the spectacle is not the good thing, right? Like, being looked at with contempt is not the good thing. But that's the one thing they were chasing throughout the entire movie, to the point where someone literally kills themselves, right, in the movie, because they're trying to get the perfect spectacle on camera, right? That their cinematographer literally just ran up to it trying to get the perfect shot and ends up dying. So,
and the crazy thing is, like, with his camera that he had, did that even record anything, or was he the only one who was going to see that shot?
We don't know.
I think
he was ready to sacrifice himself, not only like, not just, oh, so everyone in the world can see this. Like, he needed to know, he needed to be a part of it. He needed to be a part of the perfect shot.
Yeah. And like, I think, I don't know, I'm going to try to like apply the theme through the plot summary, right? Because the whole shtick is that Daniel Kaluuya, Kiki Palmer, their characters are like descendants of black cowboys, but their line in their, like, what their line of work really is raising horses for cinema, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're involved in the sale of the spectacle. Their claim to fame is that their ancestor was like one of the first black people in cinema, and he was a black cowboy. So
he was one of the first people to be like shot in cinema.
That's what I meant.
One
of the first people to be captured. So it's like their lineage is of being a spectacle. And even like when you consider like when things don't add up for them after their father's death, like Kiki Palmer is trying to still make it in the entertainment industry. The spectacle is like seen as a way out of financial ruin, even in that case, right? Or if you take like the Best Buy employee, he sells cameras, you know what I mean? He's involved in the sale of the spectacle. And I think like what Daniel Kaluuya's character represents to me is like, there's a past that America has, which was of conquering the frontier. And then there's what happens after the frontier has been conquered. And that's that, you know, the society, the spectacle, as Guy Debord would put it, right? We've already seen everything that's there to be seen. Now, how do we like repackage and enjoy it such that like you can enforce the mechanisms of capitalism and shit like that, right? So that people don't question why things are the way they are, and you don't have that overturn that was discussed in Us. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of funny that like the way to beat the beast, even at the end of the movie, Daniel Kaluuya's character is like, he literally is going to take the cowboy route of trying to like tame the beast. And he goes back on horseback in a very amazing scene. Doesn't work. Does defeat it like by like popping another balloon in a reference to the monkey scene.
Right.
But she gets the beast on photo. You know what I mean? So it's like the spectacle still conquers all in the present mode, but like the old way of conquering the frontier doesn't seem to work. And I don't know if Jordan Peele necessarily intended for that to be the takeaway, but that's been like my gut. That's been my reaction to the film after letting it sit for a bit. But I think like when my first gut reaction was like, this is definitely about the spectacle. And my first thought while watching the movie was when Jupiter called them the observers, I was trying to like flashback in my head because like the first intro of the scene was like inside the gut of the creature, right? And then it was the photographic like scene of like the guy on horseback. So I thought like, is the alien watching us? And is the film going to be a critique of like the society of the spectacle and being a viewer and consuming content? That's what I thought it was. Nope, flipped it on its head. You know what I mean? Where it's actually, no, this is about man versus beast and about what happens when you turn both people and nature into a spectacle.
Well, I guess the question is, do you think that us watching the alien is the spectacle, or do you think we are the spectacle, right? Because think about this pre-movie, if we're doing this chronologically, right? The beast is just eating. It's just eating. Like it's just doing what beasts do. You know, it sees a horse galloping around. It goes, I'm hungry, and it eats it. Right. So what is it doing in all that time and passing? It's chilling in clouds. It's literally watching us. I think the point is that
the other subversion there too, right? Where it's like we think it's a UFO the whole time. It literally looks like a UFO.
True.
And then we find out it's a beast, right?
Yeah,
the other thing about the spectacle is like we get to make our own assumptions about what something is, but then to encounter it for what it is actually far more terrifying and humiliating in some sense.
Especially with the fact that the beast wouldn't just eat you, it'll eat you if you looked at it. Like you had to make eye contact with it, and that is when it was allowed to eat you. So like the spectacle of like looking, especially when it was Jupiter and the group of people who all who are at like the cowboy ranch thing, like they were there to look, to like be a part of this, like gaze upon it, and that was just causing their doom because they couldn't not look at it, but if they did, they would die.
No, that's a really good point. Looking, like literally just watching was the problem, right? Watching the everyone at Jupiter, they died because they watched. Everyone watching the TV show that the monkey was in, when the monkey finally slapped, they were the reason. Like, they were definitely the cause. Watching the alien. Yeah, definitely the spectacle. I guess my question is, when he's... Because the Bible, the passage in Nahum, right? Where it's like, I will make you the spectacle. Who do you think... If you had to say that it was someone talking to someone else... In the movie, who do you think the spectacle was?
I think it's everyone saying it to everyone. You know what I mean? In some level. But specifically, I think it is the creature saying it to us. You could also say it's the chimpanzee saying it to everyone it massacred. But specifically, like, you know, like it's just to reread that. You know what I mean? And I will cast abominable filth upon thee and make thee vile. That reminds me of the scene where, like, the creature, like, flies past the house.
Right.
And it, like...
It's rain like, from it, the...
I mean, because they're trying to, like, really set up the fact that it's a predator, right? And, like, if you've ever walked in the woods and you've seen hairballs, like, that's just a fact of predation, is, like, they don't absorb everything. But then, like, it's far more monstrous in this movie where it literally rains blood and, like, metal that it can't digest out. And in that process of horror, we observe like Kiki Palmer and I think the other guy who was the Best Buy employee. I think the character's name was Angel, if I'm not.
Yeah, mistaken. Angel. I love Angel, dude.
Yeah, I mean, they're great casting, solid casting all around. But they are terrified throughout that scene, right? And we're observing them, right? So like maybe not literally. That's the creature saying it to them. But I feel like conceptually the passage applies to the whole movie.
That's fair.
I think it might be like the everyone saying it to everyone, but no one really knowing. Like, I don't think the people who were the actors on the TV show were trying to make a spectacle out of like the chimp, but by being a part of this system. And everything they did. I don't think I just feel like everybody was making a spectacle out of everyone. They were making a spectacle out of the horses, out of like the fact that Keke Palmer and Daniel Kaluuya like got fired from that first job and just because the horse didn't want to work.
It was kind of like space, right? And they're like, Daniel Kaluuya is being like the, you know, kind of very shy, doesn't know how to do a public speaking thing. And then Keke Palmer is being a little bit more like flamboyant, but very self-aggrandizing, self-promoting.
Dude, I love her character, man. Like, yeah, like the juxtaposition between the brother and sister, like what Sky was saying earlier about like the fact that you could tell they were siblings without really having to be told they were siblings almost, was amazing. Like, that's literally how me and my sister are. Like, but he really nailed that. He hit that on the head so hard. Like, it was perfect. Their relationship and everything. Sorry, I just wanted to say that I love Keke Palmer and her character as well. So.
Oh yeah, no. It was great all around.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting to cast her because she was a child star, and like has been working for like majority of her life since like she was 9. Keela and the Bee. I think she was working before that. Mm-hmm. So like she can also feel with the being a spectacle. Kind of like being shushed off to different places just to work while no one really cares about you being a child or mm-hmm. you probably getting that education or being what people could consider normal. So I think her being a part of it with her history also like hits the nail on the head a little bit more too.
Yeah. And also like something that I was just thinking of, this is kind of unrelated, but I think the big thing that everyone thinks about with this movie now is like, what was the purpose of the scene with the monkey? What was Jordan Peele's intent? And I'm actually thinking about like the composition of the shot, right? And it's done almost entirely in first person from Jupiter's perspective, right? Mm-hmm. And ironically, that scene is made a spectacle too.
Because of SNL. The SNL skit and like how everybody was
making a joke of it too. But I'm saying even to like us as the audience viewing it from his perspective, Jupiter is still like observing the spectacle of violence being created, right? And I think that's why he doesn't put two and two together of like the spectacle of making this alien creature, whatever, like an amusement thing, right?
Well, I think there's a big disconnect between Is the dude's name Jupiter?
Yeah,
I think it was Jupe Park or something like that. Let me.
I know the park's name was Jupiter, but I don't know if that was his name.
I'm pulling up the Wikipedia right now as we speak.
But I mean, while you're looking, I think the big disconnect in that character was because of the fact that he was the one being exploited earlier, so he doesn't get to see. So like at the end of the day, like for example, when the monkey was doing all the killing, and when he was about to, and when he finally got, you know, done killing, found Jupiter, and they did their little almost fist bump thing, that was almost like Sky said, that was them linking up and going, right. we're in this together. We're both being exploited. This was like is incredibly fucked up, right? But I think that he kind of missed that. Because of the fact that he was on one side of it and didn't fully, like, he was a child, didn't understand, so now he goes and he continues that cycle of exploitation in various different ways. So, like, it's
really interesting to see that change. Yeah, and in fact, he sells spectacle to society, right?
Exactly.
Like, he sells, like, one, like, the trauma of the event to people who are fans of the show. But then even then, like, his ranch is, like, a spectacle of, like, Wild West society that we know is actually plagued by, like, the worst excesses of settler colonialism. And also, like, again, like, he's profiting off of unwitting people. I'm guessing he's scalping people at his little theme park, too. You know
what I mean? Would not be surprised. That does not look like the most well-established business.
Yeah, especially the fact that he only came 6 months before, which
was the time the dad died. Right?
Yeah. So, like, I'm guessing as soon as he heard about the beast, he packed up from wherever he was so he can try to, you know, figure out and try to see how he can use this to his advantage. Because that's really how the only thing he knows to do. I think for people like that, it's not a morality thing because it was a part of the morals around you that this was okay.
I mean, what's the old adage? Like, adage. Oh my God. You know, that hurt people, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And like, this is a child who's been made spectacle. He watched other people be made into a spectacle, animals turned into a spectacle. And then the only lesson he's internalized from that is, well, it's still okay to make money off of it, right?
Yeah. Like, especially the SNL skit part, like first of all,
where he's burying the trauma so deep under, like,
yeah, like the fact that it sounds like a thing SNL will do, like people fucking died and they're over here making a joke about right. it, probably like the weekend of, and like, imagine him being a child, like just going through that trauma and then watching SNL or even hearing about the SNL skit being like, ah, ha, 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 the monkey went crazy. Like, that probably really fucked him up. Like, that doesn't make you a normal person. Like, seeing that in real time and, like, everything being brushed under the rug.
So, yeah, with that actually being the centerpiece of the movie, in my opinion, I found a couple things as I was, like, preparing for the episode. One is, there's an old Jordan Peele tweet. I can't find it in the outline, but it was literally him like describing a dream he had had of a chimpanzee like causing a violent mayhem and then being shot. And then he woke up like in tears, like over the dream, right? Obviously, man probably had a nightmare, but then thought like, okay, I could probably like work this into a film I do someday, right? But it's also very resonant of like the whole Harambe incident in 2016. And if you want like a play-by-play of what was seen in the movie, right? There's the case of Travis the chimpanzee. And this is one of those really like infamous ass cases where it was a chimpanzee that was kept as a domestic pet by this couple in Connecticut. Allegedly, you know, was pretty okay, but I think was for whatever reason was given Xanax.
What? I didn't know about that.
Yeah, it was prescribed or given Xanax. We don't know why.
But not all the time. But I think the real thing about, like, they try to make sure and hone into the fact that he was taken away from his mother at 3 days old. Yes,
that's true. That is the true thing.
Like he did not...
Like, the chimpanzee's mother had died, and then within 3 days was sold to this couple.
Like, he had known those people his entire life. He was not at all like socialized around any other chimpanzees or any other animals at all. And his nature still created this situation. Well, not his nature. His nature gave in to being a part of this situation of being abused for so long. And
well, I mean, yeah, because it's like, you know, you're keeping a wild animal. Likely that it was a male chimpanzee, so probably had never bred before. So that creates anxiety in an animal, right?
And aggression, yeah.
And aggression. Mm-hmm. And then it's been very poorly socialized. It kind of was made a spectacle too, right? Because they're showing it off to their friends. They're showing it off to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think... I'll just get into the contours of the case real quick, just okay. We can give the commentary. So I'll be as quick as I can. So after being given Xanax, he almost runs out of the house. So the owner and a friend or employee of theirs, I'm not 100% sure.
It's a friend.
A friend, yeah. Go in to try to catch Travis. Travis at this point is losing his mind, and begins assaulting this person, right? And disfigures her face in the process, and it's very like horrible what happens. Cops had to break in, shoot Travis, and the victim, you know, was left disfigured for like, you know, for a very long time after this, right? And the spectacle never ends there, right? Because the whole case was turned into a spectacle. The trial surrounding this was also turned into a big thing. And then the victim was even brought onto Oprah, and she had, like, much like the character in the movie, had like a hat with a veil over her face. And then Oprah was like, do you want to lift the veil and show us your face, kind of deal, right? Which you know, the one is like horrifying, but then like the theme of the movie comes back to us, right? Which is like, even after all this ordeal, the victim is made into a spectacle.
That is so insane.
Right, right. So,
and I want to pause and make sure that we know that we should definitely do an episode on how horrible Oprah is, because yes. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
There's like, there's some wild shit, man, out there.
Like, about Oprah. I've read a few things, like the stuff with her and Monique alone, like the long-standing beef with her and Monique is insane. Like, this Oprah is fucking insane. This bitch is crazy. And I think we should do an episode about her, because she there is something mentally, like, she must be a narcissist. Something wrong with her.
The funny thing is, I don't know too much about the funny thing is that I don't know too much about the whole Oprah situation. I know things that I've heard here and there. But, like, I would love to be on that episode just to hear Sky rage about Oprah, honestly.
Oh, like, for real. And even, like, the idea of, like, them going on Oprah. And, like, we don't know what time period this is supposed to be. Because that really matters. Like, are you going to be on the Oprah Winfrey show? Like, old school Oprah, where she was bringing people.
Well, the contour of this case, around 2008.
Well, I'm not talking about the case. I'm talking about the movie.
The movie.
Yeah. But, like, if the movie is set in our time right now, Oprah doesn't have, like, an official show. She just shows up when there's some big tea. And to put her 2 cents in and just be like, wow, really? and exploit them. Those people for her benefit and gain, her monetary gain. So it's... like, the idea of, like, them trying to get this Oprah shot, if it's before her show ended, it makes a little bit more sense, because, like, Oprah was, like, one of the biggest TV shows ever. Mm-hmm. But if it was, like, after, post her show, then it's saying even more, because she's only come out, like, to talk to, like, freaking...
Prince Harry
and shit. Yeah. Harry like, just to do, like, the messiest kind of interviews. So, like, the idea of, like, they're, like...
Once again, like, you're onto something here, right? Because the theme of the movie is now, like, reaching outside of itself, which is, like, Oprah is, like, kind of the master of spectacle in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's, like, she intercedes and, like, asks the questions, gets people to cry, gets people to fight. Shows, like, really gory shit on live TV, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
She evil, I'm telling y'all. I'm telling you.
I mean, I guess, like, that is the biggest takeaway of this film, right? Is that the society of spectacle holds true.
So we're talking a lot about the spectacle. I wanted to kind of introduce another idea here. What about the motif of just taming the untamable? Right, with the monkey being one, where the monkey was tamed in the sense that, like, he knew how to act around humans. He knew he was generally a good monkey. I'm assuming a great monkey, since he ended up on a TV show. Taming the obtainable in the sense of the horses in the very beginning, the horse them being fired because the horse didn't want to act right. Us using animals and whatever to essentially it's more along the themes of exploitation, but it's man versus beast in the sense that the beast is not going to be tamed. Like the UFO was a UFO, but it did not, it was a predator. You looked at it, it came for you, you know, at the end of the day. So how do you guys feel about those themes?
So I've been ruminating on this since we've watched the movie, actually, and this is a very, you know, profitable angle of discussion, right? And ironically, the thing that made me enter this whole debate bro philosophy douchebag phase that I've been in since I was a kid is, like, I actually just really liked animals as a kid, right? And I was always finding myself justifying that to people for whatever reason. Like, hey, I think conservation's a thing. Hey, I don't think we should be mean to animals. Like, that's my bizarre entry into all this, right?
That's your wild, wild take, huh? It's crazy. Yes, be nice to animals? Wild. That's so controversial, man. Be careful. Be careful you tell that one, too.
No, but, like, it's the kind of thing that, like, it's... Taming the untamable, right? I think, like I was saying earlier, with like, you know, there's this theme of like conquering the frontier versus the society of the spectacle. When you conquer the frontier, you still exist next to nature, right? There is man versus nature, but you understand it for what it is. We kind of live in a post-frontier society, right? And what that means is, like, I think our relationship to the natural world is very abstracted and alienated. You know what I mean? We live more in our houses than we do outside, but even then, like, most people have this conception of the great outdoors and nature as like this space of like disparate, untouched land that needs to be preserved. And that does to an extent, right? But then think about the raccoons that live by the dumpster. Exactly. Think about like the bees that feed off of like the sugar off of a 7-Up can. You know what I mean? Like, nature is still all around you even then. You got the Canada geese that seem to survive all manner of
situations. I hate those geese.
So it's like, but that's what I'm saying is, like, you know,
perseverance, man.
Just because
humanity. They need to stop persevering. Yeah,
well, I mean, that's the thing, though, is like, I'm sure an animal would say the same thing about humanity, right? Because it's like,
I know they was been saying that for years,
right?
I can't wait till they die. Like, yep. Why,
but that's what I'm saying.
Right? Why this version pop off and not die out like the other ones?
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying, right? Is like, you know, we have technology, we have these tools to like restrict and restrain nature and keep us in that post-scarcity state, right? But then to uphold that takes a massive amount of effort of labor, first and foremost. But then it also means keeping people away from the edges of it, right? So like, if you live in the suburbs, for example, you have no idea where your food came from, let alone like what goes on in another country, let alone what goes on in like another part of part of nature, right? So there's that aspect to it where I think like people just have these very abstracted relationships to nature, right? And you see that in the start of the movie where like the studio staff is just not mindful of their space, not like handling any safety procedure about the horse, not trusting the expert who works with the horse, you know what I mean? And they're just like pointing reflective objects at the horse, putting lights in its faces. And that's a kind of behavior you only obtain when you live in this fully abstracted, what I would call anthropocentric society. It's fully centered around humans. You see where I'm going with this?
I do.
But the reality is you know, whether or not you have that worldview and you operate in that worldview, it doesn't change the reality that nature exists around you.
That's interesting. So in terms of the layers in terms of the layers of abstraction, how we've abstracted away nature, that's a very interesting take. I don't think the problem is the abstraction itself. I don't know about you guys, but I'm not trying to go murder cows to get a burger. You know, that's just me.
And that's what I'm saying is like the abstraction is not necessarily something we chose to do. It's just the reality of our conditions.
Right. I think the bigger issue is the fact that with that abstraction comes ignorance. With that ignorance leads to
disrespect. That's what I meant to get at. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I meant to get at.
So like the problem in of itself is just the blatant disrespect. It's like, I don't know shit about chimps. You know, I didn't like before, like the first time I heard about that chimp story that we were talking about earlier, where woman, like the, you know, the pet chimp, I didn't realize how fucking horrifyingly scary chimps are. I thought they were just these cute little monkeys that you just see them swinging. No, they have like the grip strength stronger than like the strongest body, like well over the strongest human bodybuilders. Like a child chimp will fuck you up.
Imagine if we gave a chimpanzee access to a gym,
dog. Oh, dude, it's over. They would be the new Homo sapiens, man. That's it.
Straight Even up. Like a basic like shit ass apartment gym, like they would dominate everything. Yeah.
So the bigger issue, like the abstractions obviously is a problem. Like, I'm not saying we should abstract everything away from nature away. Obviously, that's not good. But speaking as a techie myself, I do love technology and I do hate nature. I mean, let's preserve nature, but I'm not trying to live in it. When it comes to abstractions, I don't mind that so long as we still understand how important, like, you know, global ecology is. As long as we understand like what nature is, how to properly be around nature, how to respect it. Those people shooting that TV show, they had no fucking business being near a chimpanzee. They had no idea what they were doing. There was like, they just did not respect the chimpanzee as much as they should have. So when something small pops like that balloon, that's when shit hits the fan. In the beginning of the movie, when we first see Keke Palmer and we see the horse, those people should not have been around that horse. Like, those people were not respecting that horse while they should. I'm not talking about like cowering in fear, but like, there should be some semblance of respect. That horse could kick you and kill you. Like, that's it. There's no more. Like, that's it. But the fact that they all were just laughing, they were all just ha ha ha. They said no flash, but started taking flash pictures. Like, shit like that. Like, it's just, I don't like, you want to be abstracted from nature? You want to get your food from a concrete jungle? Fine, do your thing. But you have to still respect nature. You have to respect the beast. You know, you can't tame everything.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of one of the things I was thinking of too, when like at the start of the pandemic, everyone was watching that film Tiger King, right?
Oh my god, yeah.
Of the Tiger King series, but, god, and like that. Everyone was getting into the, first of all, they made a spectacle of the guy who was the Tiger King and all the human beings involved. One of the things that never actually got discussed was the fact that this guy had so many fucking tigers in a private collection. Many of them inbred, many of them sick, of course. But like, people, staff got hurt. Someone got their arm chewed off. You know what I mean?
And wasn't his like technically a sanctuary, or was it just like a petting zoo?
It was a petting zoo.
Yeah, it was supposed to be like, he claims it was like conservation and shit, but it was a petting zoo. Like, let's be real.
In practice, it was a money making operation. It was another element of turning nature into the spectacle.
And that's the thing, is like, even the people who say that they're trying to do well, like, that doesn't mean that they are.
that's the thing, right? Like, you know, we were talking about like the abstraction and the ignorance that comes with it. At some level, it's very hard to divorce that level of abstraction from where you sit in society, right? Because it's like, you know, then you run into very weird like areas, right? Where it's like, okay, zoos are bad because of the spectacle. Maybe. But then where else can we, like, breed animals in captivity while, like, you know, sites are under attack, for instance? Or, like, what do you do with endangered populations? Can you, like, reintroduce them from a captive environment back into the wild? Or can you preserve, like, certain species like that? There's things like that that apply. But where do you, like, keep certain animals safely, like, if they're not longer safe in the wild? There's cases like that. There's also the fact that, like, a lot of us I don't think people choose to have this kind of dominionist view over nature necessarily. I think oftentimes it's just conditioned. And like you said, like, you know, ignorance is not necessarily a thing that people choose to have. It's just something that you are quite honestly blind to because of your position. Oftentimes not by choice. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's hard to be aware of your own ignorance. It just is. That's just the nature of ignorance.
But I will say that most like psychopaths and serial killers are mean to animals.
And they, so, that is also
that's something to think about.
And that is the thing, right? Where it's like, there is something to be said, one of like how misanthropic our society is. The way we treat other human beings in our society is appalling. And then you could also like extrapolate that further and be like, yeah, the way we treat nature is also kind of gross. And I don't think those two opinions need to be prioritized one against the other. Like, I think there's this very false, like, this false equivalency made where it's like, oh, you care about animals, that means you don't care about people, or vice versa. I think you can care about both and still make progress on both fronts. I don't.
Of see course, you can.
Those things have to be, you know, put in competition. But that's, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that the weird balance beam that people put you on when you say you care about the environment is a real thing, and it's so fucking goofy in my head, because it's like, right. I care about the environment because I care about people. Like, what do you think is going to happen when humans die off? You think the world's going to end? Like, the world will just be barren? No, it's not. Life is going to evolve.
Oh, it's going to be thriving.
Right. Like, I don't, like,
Canada geese about to be thriving, bro.
That's what I'm saying. Like, human beings, like, anything short of, like, nuking the Earth, we're not going to destroy the Earth. We're going to make the Earth uninhabitable for us. You know, like, I care because if we don't, we're gonna die out. You know, someone has to care. So this whole idea where it's like, oh, you care about the environment and not people, it's such a dumb argument that I do hear all the time. Like, it's just ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's probably everything that we could extrapolate about that one scene. And then this kind of ties into the next point I had in the outline, which is, you know, exactly how much overanalysis of a Jordan Peele plot should you be doing?
All of
because
it.
Because I sent that tweet in the outline, right, where someone's like, oh, these, you know, I think Jordan Peele is the best director of all time, and he has these deep themes. And Jordan Peele immediately replies, like, bro, do not overanalyze my shit. The phone down. Which, I mean, it kind of begs the question, right? Is like, is there a overanalysis industrial complex? Like, you'll see, like, this glut of YouTube videos being like, the hidden themes in Thor Ragnarok. Like, shit like that.
Tessa Thompson is gay. You know what I
mean? Oh, the hidden themes of Thor Ragnarok. That's amazing.
I mean, I do think it is partially, like, the themes are they're put out there and they're just laid down. But I think the thing about directors is they'll have whatever they want the movie to be about, and then they won't care if that's what you believe in. At least a good director, they'll be like, yeah, sure, yeah, that could be an interpretation, because that's literally what film interpretations are. It's like,
that's kind of how it went with Mulholland Drive, right?
Where, yeah,
like, there were so many interpretations. Yeah,
that reminds me of the literary concept of, like, death of the author. It's like, when you want to interpret a piece of art, it's like, once they put it out, your interpretation is just as good as theirs. Like, even it's a weird thing to think about, but, like, the meaning you get from art is just as valid as the meaning that the artist intended to put in there, you know? Right. So it's not like, Jordan Peele is the only one who gets to analyze his own work. Like, our interpretation is valid. But at the same time, I think there is a thing as, like, over-analysis. I think there is a thing of, like this digging too deep, looking for meaning that isn't there. Luckily, I don't think that that's what's happening. I think there's tons of meaning in this movie, though.
Yeah, I think like, you know, there's a lot of extrapolative, like, deduction. Oh my god, I'm sounding like a douche. I don't know.
We all sound like douches. It's okay, except for Sky.
We literally recorded a fucking podcast. Yeah.
My goal is to sound like sort of dumb, but while also making you be like,
That's not sort of dumb though. That's smart. That's, what do you mean? You're doing a pretty bad job then.
Damn it.
Come on, Sky, sound dumber. Jesus.
Like, I think there are a lot of, like, you know, takes and, like, ideas that can spring off from analyzing this movie, but I think then there are, like, just, like, you're grasping for straws to make content. And that's kind of what we are doing here. I'm not going to say, like, that is the entire...
I mean, I'm streaming this on Twitch, so, yeah.
You're streaming this on Twitch. I'm about to post this on a podcast platform. You know what I mean? Like, we're all reaching in some capacity to make content, and I feel like that one scene where I really thought it was going to be about, like, viewer culture and, like, viewers wanting to consume more and more content, that's what I thought the goal of this movie was going to be, and it really flipped my expectations, which is good. But then, like, that is, like, something that I am thinking about now, which is just how desperately and how wantonly we all consume content these days. You know,
but I mean, I don't think that's a, like, in terms of, like, the movie and the theme of, like, the constant, like, wheel of content that we're always pushing out, or that we're expected to push out, or that we want to push out. I think that's a very important theme in the movie. Like to say that the movie wasn't about that's kind of wild to me, just because, like, that's what was driven, that they were trying to get the Oprah shot, right? They were trying to literally make content. The monkey, again, TV show content, the Asian dude, the horse, like, it was literally, like, if you had told me that the main theme you got from this was how annoying and exploitive the industry of content creation can be, I would be on board with that. Like that sounds like
makes perfect sense. You're right. You proved me wrong there, actually, because like even then, like in the last part of the film, who else is an interceding force? A fucking director and a TMZ reporter.
Exactly. This movie says a lot about a lot, which I think is cool.
We live in a society.
We live in a whole ass society.
Oh my god, we live in a society, bro. We just
in here in this whole ass society, bro.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, I think we definitely covered a lot of the shit in the outline I intended to. I just want to make another point about the cinematography, and I think that's everything I had planned to discuss, was the nighttime shots.
Oh, they were so good.
So well done, dude. Like, this is why I am actually requesting, like, do not watch this movie on a plane, okay? Don't watch this movie on a plane! Because, like, it's actually, like, it comes out really beautifully when it's projected on screen, and a lot of the movie takes place at night. And the way the film is shot, the way that it's lit, even though, like, these are nighttime scenes, the amount of terror you're made to feel from, like, the kind of vagary of the darkness is really well done. So, you know, I don't have the language to talk about the technical stuff of producing films, but that shit, great. 10 out of 10. Loved it.
I don't have the technical words, but that shit slapped. I love that. That was awesome. Since we're talking about things that aren't necessarily big themes, I do want to say the supporting cast was fucking fire. I loved all the side characters, like the people who weren't that, like Angel. Amazing character, great character. The cinematographer, whatever his name is, that director dude.
Director, yeah.
I hated him, but like you were supposed to not like him because he was annoying.
Right.
His weird director shit. So like he was an amazing character. He drove the plot forward without being too annoying, even though he was kind of supposed to be annoying. It's awesome. I love that. The supporting cast, also the movie's use of humor. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. The humor, because I feel like in a lot of movies, it's like a seesaw almost, right? You can get humor, or you can get tension and horror, right? And like for example, Thor Ragnarok. We keep trashing this movie, even though I think it is a top tier Marvel movie, but whatever. Thor Ragnarok did a interesting job at it. I'm not gonna say great. I'm not gonna say bad, but there are points in the movie where there should be high stakes, like there's aliens and people are gonna literally die, and then we just crack a joke and it's just like, oh, the tension's kind of ruined. This movie did the exact opposite. That's my big
critique with Marvel movies, actually, right? Is that like the seriousness is always immediately written off.
Exactly. And this movie, you had the humor, right? Like Kiki was literally the funnest. She was so much fun. She was so funny throughout the whole movie, and it didn't like ruin the tenseness, it didn't ruin the horror, it didn't ruin the suspense at all in any meaningful way, which I thought was just beautiful. You don't see that very often at all.
Yeah, and in fact the jokes weren't even played off as jokes, you know what I mean? It was just the characters being themselves, and it was kind of just their absurd behavior was funny to us, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I mean, even then, like, you know, with Daniel Kaluuya's character just like, nope. he wasn't cracking a joke, it was just like a kind of like shot of relief in a very tense scene. That's really what it was.
Yeah. I the movie was so good. I actually want to see it again.
Yeah, I would see it again.
Yeah, I think it's worth a second watch. All right. That's everything I had on my outline, guys. Any other themes before we start to, you know, get into like wrap up and plugs?
Black people are cool.
Yeah.
That's just my personal opinion. I think we make cool stuff.
Like, let black people be creators and stop rebooting everything. And let's get some new content out there.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, that's why I love Jordan Peele so much. Not only is his movies great, but they're all original, which is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. He's one of the few people creating original IP right now.
Mm-hmm.
It is desperately needed.
Desperately.
Final thoughts on rating. What would you give it out of? Were we using a 5 or a 10 to rate movies? I forgot.
I like going 10 just so I can be more annoying.
Let's do 10. Let's do
number. 10. I'm going to give this...
10, what do you give it?
I'm going to give this a good, like, 9. Right? Like a 9, maybe 9.3. That's what I mean by particular and annoying. But a good 9.3, I think, is pretty fair score.
Yeah, I think it's in 9 territory too.
I was gonna say 8.7. I'm not sure what would. I'm just. I've always been one of these people that would like, give me a number between 1 and 10. No halves. I'm like, okay, 7.5. All right. I do think that it was really good. And I'm not sure how it could be better, but I'm going to save my 9s and 10s.
For what? For what else? This was a Jordan Peele movie.
Probably for something life-changing, I guess.
I don't think that was bad at all. Like, I loved every part of it.
I give it a, what?
But I think you go deeper.
I disrespectfully disagree with that score. I disrespectfully disagree. And here's why. There's one critical aspect that we have not brought up this episode, but I'm going to bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
And Angel's cute.
Angel is.
I mean, shit. Okay, that counts too. But okay, baby, this is Keke Palmer.
Baby, this is That's Keke true. Palmer.
That's true.
She was absolutely amazing, and I would love. I think the things that could possibly make it a 10, or a 9 or a 10 is him making movies where more women are the main focus. Because
I mean, wasn't Lupita Nyong'o the focus in Us?
Wasn't it the whole family though?
Well, I mean,
no.
Yeah, but she
No. Like... It really was not the whole family. She was like the driving force behind the whole thing. Like,
okay,
she's like the main character. Her family is like important, but not as important as her.
All right.
I wanted to say more, but I didn't want to spoil it. My bad.
No, you're fine. I think if like I want to see more of Keke Palmer being like the main character. When it comes to like situations like that, like obviously she is a very important character, but like when she will get her awards for this, it'll be for a supporting actress. So like I would love to see more stuff with her being a part of this. Like I want her to be a part of the Jordan Peele franchise. I want
just the way that he uses Daniel Kaluuya.
Yeah, let him be like.
That would actually be I'm all for that. That's amazing. Yeah, absolutely.
But no, I think it was amazing. I like the characters. I like the like message. And I'm excited to get my crybaby ass up and watch some scary movies.
Yeah.
This was definitely my first experience watching a horror movie with a partner. And let me tell you, I was not ready for how tightly my hand was going to be squeezed.
You should have knew. I already told you.
Like, I knew all the jokes about like, watching a scary movie with your girlfriend, haha, but like, this was my first time actually experiencing that.
I'm so bad. See, here's the thing. I'm so bad when it comes to horror movies, I understand where the horror comes from, but I don't really get scared, per se.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, like, I'm like, oh, wow, that's fucked up. You know, stuff like that. Meanwhile, Turtle will be next to me, like, shaking in her boots, and I'm just looking at her like, what's the problem? Like, what do you mean?
It be like that.
It do. It really do.
In conclusion, it do indeed be like
that. It do indeed. It really do be being like that.
All right. Any other closing thoughts before we move into plugs?
No, that's it for me.
All right. Well, the show is Greenhouse Gaslighting, but we were hosted quite generously by John. You can follow him on Twitch. Twitch. You can follow John on Twitch as SS Boom Man. I'll include the link to that in the description for this episode. And if you want to follow us, we're mostly on Twitter at @podgreenhouse, but I'll include all the links to our social media below. We got a link tree for all that shit, but you know, Facebook, YouTube, Grindr, Bumble, Hinge, Matrimony.com, BlackPeopleMeet.com,
Christian Mingle.
Farmers only.
We got you covered.
More importantly, farmers only.
Mm.
Right. The goth farmers,
we're trying to break into that market.
What was that meme? What was that meme? Like the country girls make do meme?
Oh. Yep. we're looking for those girls to, to start listening to our podcast.
Why you gotta do the Lisa Guy voice from It's a Different World? Oh my gosh. Well, thanks again for tuning in, dear listeners. This has been another segment of Movie Magic over here on Greenhouse Gaslighting. We'll see y'all next time. Take care.